We're joined now by Dr. Catherine O'Neill, infectious disease specialist at Our Lady of the Lake. She graduated from LSU School of Medicine and has almost two decades of experience in her field. And Dr. O'Neill, we're about to go to a break in a minute or so, but obviously these are perilous times. Matt, can you see if we have Dr. O'Neill on the line? And as noted, every day at noon these figures are given, and Louisiana is now above 2,300 cases, 83 deaths, and we're in a situation in which those numbers, when they're announced today, will go up. And the question is, how much will they go up? 2,305 cases, to be precise, 83 dead, 676 still in the hospital, and we know that this has had a repercussion of enormous magnitude on businesses, and Louisiana businesses are hoping that the bailout bill today from Congress, which will be approved by the U.S. House of Representatives, will provide sustenance for businesses and for workers who are affected immensely by this. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, which has had three up days, is down early going. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you're staying safe. And Matt Doyle producing our guest for a little while is Dr. Catherine O'Neill, infectious disease doctor at Our Lady of the Lake Hospital in Baton Rouge. The USA now has 85,762 reported cases of coronavirus. That likely will go over 100,000 people over the next few days, if not tomorrow. That's the most in the world. The only good news is that we're sixth in the world in the number of deaths from COVID-19. So it appears that the U.S. health system is doing the best it can under dire circumstances. And, of course, we hear these stories that are valid about, not fake news at all, about health systems being overwhelmed with people who are sick. Dr. O'Neill, how are we looking here in Baton Rouge?
Hi, Jim. We're concerned. We've admitted more and more patients in the last week than we'd seen in the month before with potential COVID symptoms. And as of last week, we really started to see an uptick in positive patients in the Baton Rouge area. We knew this would come as we were a little behind New Orleans and seeing that surge of patients, but that surge is still concerning. We know that the trajectory for New Orleans right now is dire if they don't start to see a tapering of those patients soon.
What has to happen for a patient to be admitted?
The first thing that happens if you come to the hospital for evaluation is that you're evaluated in a triage area. You're given a mask before you encounter a healthcare person, and then they're going to interview you, get your history, find out sort of if you're high risk or low risk. If you're a young person with no medical problems and are looking good, your vital signs are stable, they may ask you to test as an outpatient and go home to recover because you're well. If you have a lot of comorbidities and already have some underlying issues, if your vital signs aren't so stable, then they're going to move you into a room and continue that evaluation. So that's sort of how we process people as they come into the hospital. And then once that evaluation begins, ultimately we end up testing a fair amount of people who have respiratory symptoms, fevers for coronavirus, whether or not they're discharged or admitted.
If somebody tests positive and they're not looking like they're in bad shape, are they sent home?
Yes, most people are sent home because most people recover just fine from this virus. It's a terrible illness and gives you fevers and cough and oftentimes vomiting and diarrhea for days, but people recover. In fact, 80% of people have very mild symptoms, if any symptoms at all. So if patients are looking good and feeling good and we can get them out of the door and well back at their house to recover, that's what we're doing.
What are the symptoms? I've heard a lot about this now, but most often, what are the symptoms?
The most common symptom are fever, shortness of breath, and cough, and that still is the most common symptom. Some people have a very mild cough for days before they start to have fever. Some people have fever first. And then we have a subset of patients who are presenting with vomiting and diarrhea. That's still not the predominant symptom, but just like the flu, we do have people who present more with GI complaints than anything else. Mm.
877-217-5757. We may take a call or two for Dr. Catherine O'Neill, who's been on the front line. She was in the studio where I am last week with the governor of Louisiana. And you were out in front on this, warning us of what was to come. And, of course, unfortunately, you were right. But when it all is said and done, let's say 18 months from now, how many of us will be infected? Do we have any kind of indication?
We hope that greater than 50% of us will ultimately become infected over a slow period of time, hoping by the late fall to winter. And the reason I say that is because, again, 80% of us will have little to no symptoms. And if we all get infected very slowly, when you reach a set point of greater than 50% of your population, you start to get some herd immunity. And then it's harder to continue to spread the virus. What we want is for that herd immunity to develop over a slow period of time so that we don't have this massive influx of patients into the hospital who are in that 20% of people who are sicker.
So all these measures in some ways are designed just to keep the hospitals from being overloaded right now.
That's right. These measures are not to keep us from never getting the novel coronavirus. They are to keep us from getting the novel coronavirus all at the same time.
How does herd immunity work?
So if you think about it, and I think that there's been a couple of things on the internet that I've seen that are great pictures of a matchbook where some of the matches are lighting and then you have one that goes out and the rest don't light up. It's the same thing for humans. Herd immunity, if I have immunity and you have immunity and then there's another person at a party that doesn't have immunity and somebody new walks in with coronavirus, if they hit you and I first and we're immune, that the virus will never get to the non-immune person because we won't spread it to the next person. So if you have greater than 50% of your population that's immune, we block the virus from continuing to spread because we won't get sick again.
Now, I've heard cases, and you can correct me if I have heard wrongly, but where spouses have unfortunately died and the other spouse is not testing positive. Is that possible?
Right, that is possible. If any of you have been in a household with a kid who has a vomiting virus, it's often one of the most horrendous things that I've experienced as a parent. But it's amazing how sometimes one of your kids gets sick and you think you're all going to go down and nobody does, right? And then occasionally two out of the five or three out of the five will get sick and the others don't. Why is that? Some of it's immunity and some of it is just luck of the draw. Who got exposed? Was there transmission because of coughing directly in the other person's face? Are we wiping down cabinets well enough and sinks and things like that and hand washing? So it's not unbelievable that you can live in the same house with someone and not get their virus. I think we see that with most viruses.
Patricia in Oak Hills asks about smokers. Are they more at risk?
Hi, Patricia. I think that we all have the same risk of coming into contact with the disease. The issue that we have with anybody who has a chronic lung condition is that if you get a cold, a cough, or a new virus, and for sure the flu or this novel coronavirus, when you already have a chronic lung condition, it's going to be harder for you to recover. And we are seeing that set of novel coronavirus patients who seem to be ill and then start to recover and then they become ill again. And our concern is that those are people who just can't handle having a very bad respiratory infection on top of bad lungs already.
877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on with Dr. O'Neill.
And thank you so much, Doctor. I wondered, like, is there an average time for this virus to kill? I mean, is there, you know, before someone dies that we know about? And does Louisiana have enough ventilators?
Those are two great questions, Phil. I think that the average time from your exposure to the virus to you becoming sick is about 5 days. And in those 5 days, you're most at risk of spreading the disease. After about 8 days, you're at less risk of spreading to other people. So we know that the virus stops replicating. We can kill the virus with good hand hygiene and then lots and lots of different products. Obviously, Clorox-based products especially can kill the virus. Do we have enough ventilators? We have enough ventilators if we slow the spread. Our concern and what we're seeing in New Orleans is that the spread has not caseload, it continues to increase, and they are getting close to running out of ventilators. Some projections say at the beginning of April, unless this curve starts to flatten steeply. In Baton Rouge, it's the same issue. We have enough ventilators today, but if we continue to see a rise in cases instead of a flattening, we will run out of ventilators. We do have to slow the spread of this infection in the community to enable us to keep enough supply to take care of the patients who come into the hospital.
David in St. Francisville asks, is it true that some are immune or will be immune to the virus?
Absolutely, David. Like all viruses, many of us will get the virus, have minimal to no symptoms, and will develop antibodies to that virus. Now, just like the flu, those antibodies can be fully protective or slightly protective. They can last for a little bit of time or a long time. And what we don't know about this novel coronavirus is how protective those antibodies are. We know people make them. There are new tests out there that can test for the antibody, but we don't know when is your risk of reinfection. Is it in 6 months? Is it a year? Is it 10 years like some viruses? And those are all things that we're studying now.
And if you recover, are there possibilities of future problems related to having had this?
Any serious illness can give you ongoing problems afterwards. And some of these people are critically ill. And if they recover from a critical illness, we can expect, like any critical illness, that you will be in a recovery stage for 3 to 6 months for some people, especially if they're on the ventilator and are sedated. For those people who have a mild illness, they should recover with very little issues, and after 2 or 3 weeks, feel fine. So it really does depend on how sick you are from the virus as to what your recovery time will be.
Here's a question from Maria in Ascension Parish, which has been hit by this substantially, asking how long can someone stay on a ventilator and survive to fight another day?
Our technology for ventilators and assistance with lung healing is amazing. And oftentimes when patients are on the ventilator for long periods of time, they'll go on to receive a tracheostomy, and they'll breathe with assistance while they recover. So when your lungs are just very weak and we know that you're in the recovery phase, you can stay on a ventilator for weeks to months, and as long as you are continuing to improve. We've seen that. Unfortunately, with this disease, we've also seen a lot of people get on the ventilator, and despite our best efforts, it is very difficult to control the infection, and we have trouble just giving them enough oxygen. And so it really does depend on how sick the individual patient is.
We'll be back to spend a few more minutes with Dr. Catherine O'Neill from Our Lady of the Lake. She is the infectious disease specialist of note, not only here but around the state. The governor chose to have her be with him when he was doing his Ask the Governor show last week. Dr. O'Neill is at your service if you'd like to get in under the wire, 877-217-5757, or talk at talklouisiana.org. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And keep the faith. Things will get better. Dr. Catherine O'Neill is on the front lines of fighting COVID-19 and corona disease. And we know that things, as the governor said, will get worse before they get better. But the flattening of the curve is what we have been discussing. And Jeff Blackman in the Garden District writes, over the last 8 days, the number of cases in Louisiana has been doubling every 2.8 days. It's now lower, he writes, than the national rate of increase. He asks Dr. O'Neill, isn't this evidence measures we put in place are having an impact?
Oh, Jeff, I hope so. I think that impacts, unfortunately, because of the delay in presenting with symptoms, often take a couple of weeks to make sure that they're not just because of lack of testing or an increase in testing. So the number of cases we see in that doubling rate is also affected by the availability of testing. So oftentimes as testing moves into the community, we see an increase that's very alarming, and we're also seeing an increase in admissions. And then as that tapers off, we have to look at how many people we've tested. I do think that it's encouraging to be stable. We hope to see that doubling rate lengthen before we know that we're out of the woods.
Bianca London writes, is it true that steroids and other anti-inflammatory drugs should be avoided in COVID patients because they suppress the immune system?
We've used anti-inflammatory drugs in many, many infections for years, and they've been well studied. And in some infections, they help, and in some infections, they hurt, and in some, they make no difference at all. Every patient presents differently. So in patients with really, really great immune systems, sometimes their immune system is working too hard. And some people don't have an immune system, and then we don't want to give immunosuppressives. So we are still, as physicians, and while we're studying this disease, taking each patient and their scenario into account when we decide what to give them for therapy.
Marie writes, schools were closed March 13th. The governor issued the stay-at-home order on March 23. When can we realistically expect the rate of new cases to slow down?
That's a really, really hard question to answer. I think that the proof is going to be in the pudding. When we see the rate slow down, we will know that our measures worked. When we let kids out of school, we still had restaurants open, we still had public gatherings, we still had lots of social functions, and those slowly decreased over the next week. And we still see people who continue to congregate despite those orders. And so I think that hopefully we're seeing the effects. We won't know the true effects for at least 2 weeks after we make a change, and possibly longer.
Now, as mentioned, the U.S. now has more cases than any country in the world, 85,906, and that number will go up. But to give you an example, China, where it started with 1.3 billion people, a country that is four times the size of the United States in population, has limited its cases to 81,340. So, and it's in large part because of measures taken to reduce contact. So at some point, will those measures help us, or have we waited too long? For example, Mardi Gras, as we know, should never have happened, but it did, and we can't take it back. How much damage has already been done that cannot be reversed as far as the spread of this, Dr. O'Neill?
We have community spread, so we can no longer live in the same world we lived in January, where we hoped that we would keep it out of this country. Instead, we have to cope with the fact that it's here and that it will become a virus that at some point all of us will see in some way or another. And what our focus is now is limiting the rate of transmission so that we don't have a surge in patients who get sick at the same time. We won't be able to completely halt transmission. We have to slow down transmission. And those same things that were done in China were done purely to slow down transmission. They are not halting transmission. They are making it manageable.
And then there are other countries that have almost no cases, and bigger countries than the United States, India, for example, which is the greatest example. But they have, in that country, not allowed any air travel the last few days, and they're going great guns to stop this. 863 cases, by the way, in India. 863. Put that in perspective, we have 2,305 in Louisiana. India has more people than China does. But Dr. O'Neill, the New Orleans area appears to be the one that has been hit, and not appears to be, it is the one that has been hit most profoundly by this in Louisiana. A question from a listener asking whether we should stay away from New Orleans if we're in another part of the state.
The quick answer is absolutely, but not because you're staying away from New Orleans, but because our shelter-at-home order means that we shouldn't be traveling. And our businesses should be limiting business travel to something that is only essential, and otherwise we should be working remotely. So right now, traveling to another city for any reason, whether it's me going to Lafayette or Alexandria or my hometown of Mamou, I don't want to travel anywhere unless it is essential to somebody's care or essential to work. And we really have to consider what the word essential means, because any travel is a new exposure.
Do medical professionals like you, do you build up an immunity potentially from this by virtue of obvious exposure?
I think that our chances of exposure as a medical professional are high. Our chances of exposure in Baton Rouge with this amount of community spread is very high. And so I expect that at some point most of us We'll have immunity, I hope, like we talked about earlier, that 50% of us will have immunity at some point in the next 6 to 9 months, which will help the control of this virus.
Hilda on airline. Hilda's been waiting patiently. You're on with Dr. O'Neill. Hi, Hilda.
Hey, I have an unusual question. It's not the norm. But if a college student, say LSU, and he's a football player, and he has a girlfriend that lives in my building, and he's here on weekends, his car tag is from Texas. I'm concerned because I'm 80 plus, and he comes into our building on the weekends and some during the week. I don't know if he's coming from Texas or if he's coming from the campus. I know he's a football player there and was probably on the great team this year. And, you know, it's not that I get that close to him, but I may be walking down the hall and he may be going up the second floor. I'm on first because of my age.
All right. Well, the students have fared well so far. There have only been 3 reported cases, I think, at LSU, and we're talking about a student body population when you count grad students, law students, well over 30,000. I would think that a football player would be probably less of a risk than others that we might encounter, Dr. O'Neill.
I think Ms. Hilda has a great question that we all think about. So we come into contact and pass by people in the course of our day all of the time. We should be limiting that as much as possible, but just to go and get your groceries, you're going to have some minimal contact with people. The best thing to do is to stay 6 feet away, to shelter in place in your home when you don't have to go and get essentials. So even if you're passing by college students who do really well with this disease, but that doesn't mean that they can't get it, they just do really well with it, and so are able to continue with their normal routine without much of a misstep. But Ms. Hilda, I think for you, stay 6 feet away from people, wash your hands, and you know, keep all of your surfaces wiped off. Try not to visit with your friends except for on the phone. And I think you're doing a great job, and we'll continue to keep yourself safe if you're paying that much attention.
One last question from a listener, and this one's a good one. If someone is positive and doesn't know it because they're not feeling particularly badly, are they more or less or about the same as far as transmitting it to somebody else?
In other viruses, when people have the virus but are doing well, and we talk a lot about asymptomatic people with coronavirus, they usually do shed less virus than a person who is very sick, but they could still transmit the virus if they're not washing their hands and covering their cough and we're not wiping down shared surfaces. So that is why, no matter if you're standing next to someone who's coughing or someone who is looking just fine, you should stand 6 feet away. We should still be covering our cough and wiping down shared surfaces. Those are the things that are going to protect us, whether the person standing next to us is positive and asymptomatic or is positive and symptomatic.
Well, Dr. O'Neill, thank you for being a warrior on the front lines of this war against coronavirus. And I appreciate your time today, and I'm sure we'll be calling again. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jim. Take care.
Take care. Dr. Catherine O'Neill, the Infectious Disease Authority at Our Lady of the Lake. A few notes here from listeners. Michael Farrar says, Jim, when you said on the air that your producer, Matt Doyle, was in a self-imposed quarantine, I was concerned about his health. However, I'm glad to hear you mention this morning that he has returned. Welcome back, Matt. And Barbara Clark, the exceptional underwriting director at WRKF, notes that it was 3 years ago today that this show returned to WRKF after a couple-year hiatus, and So I actually had forgotten about this being our anniversary, but I'm pleased to be here even under these conditions, and especially so because at this time these kinds of information programs are more essential than ever before, and hopefully we're providing some knowledge that is beneficial to you. Now, Monday, we were slated to hear today from Dr. Rebecca Gee, but she has stated that she will be with us Monday, and that's fine. And I'm sure the former health secretary will have much to say. And thank goodness Thomas Costigan is such a good sport, this fine writer about the environment. He has once again postponed his visit. His book is Hacking Planet Earth. We'll be hearing from him soon. Richard Reeves, longtime columnist, brilliant man, frequent guest on this show many years ago, has died at 83. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Stay tuned.